MadPipe Madcast. Welcome to the MadPipe Madcast, where we talk about marketing strategy and bring marketing insights to businesses and nonprofits. I'm Daniel DeGree, your host, and today my guest is Taryn Starry, a professional speaker, communication coach, and team building coach based in New York City. Taryn, could you first talk a little about what you do?
Hi, sure. Thanks for having me. So one of the things I do is I do one-to-one coaching with anyone who wants to improve their public speaking skills. Two, I offer classes for individuals who want to work in a group environment to improve how they communicate. And three, I offer corporate team building workshops for companies who want to help increase their productivity, creativity, and team building skills for their employees.
Well, I've taken one of your classes, Taryn, and those are the concrete things that you do, admittedly. But I want to drill down a little deeper, too, into the more also emotional side of what you do. Because I remember taking one of your communications classes and feeling like there was a renewed confidence and sort of more, I know this sounds a little airy-fairy, but a little more connectedness to myself coming out of that course. And also, it took a little bit of courage, but it was sort of courage that got to be expressed in a safe environment. And I felt great coming out of there. I'm looking forward to taking another one. But I want to bring up how that might relate to our listeners who are striving to create content, whether that content is a script for a video that they're going to perform for their marketing, or it's a blog post that they're going to write, or an event that they're going to give because they're doing event marketing and they're the host. I think there are some issues there that you could speak to. Like, for instance, the issue of courage. I think the biggest thing that maybe a lot of people struggle with is, you know, I'm nervous about putting myself out there. I'm afraid to be fully expressed. And I think what you do gets at that. Am I wrong? And what could you tell our listeners about what we need to do to get at that ourselves?
Sure. Well, I think what you're talking about is risk-taking and showing people who we really are. And that's a risk because some people won't like it. Some people will turn away from it. Some people will judge you for it. And any time that we stand up, and public speaking is the most obvious example of that, anytime we stand up and risk telling people who we are, what we're about, our ideas, something we've done, something we dream of doing, it's a risk. When life coaches work with people to set goals, one of the first things they do is tell them to make it public, because it's not enough to sit around and have this goal and have it in secret, because if you don't have some accountability, if you don't create a support for your goals and your dreams, then you don't ever really have to work for them. So in the same way, when you stand up and show people who you really are, when we are faced with judgment, with criticism, which we're always faced with a lot less of that than we think we're going to be faced with, then it scares us. So a lot of my classes, my coaching, and what I do is I work with the fears around communication and, in particular, public speaking and how we feel about ourselves and the dynamic when we have to stand up in front of other people.
You know, that brings up something. So from a marketing standpoint, in order to give a successful event, whether it's a panel discussion, a workshop, or you're doing a video or a webinar or something like that, you know, branding comes into play. And when somebody says that I'm going to be presenting, I need to take the risk of presenting who I am and what I'm about, I think immediately of branding and identity. And that seems to require not just the courage or the risk-taking to present it, but some self-knowledge, that I've sort of plumbed the depths enough that I know who I am and what I'm about, and I can communicate that clearly. And it, not in cliches, you know, I'm this company and we manufacture this widget, or I'm this company and I provide this service. But really what it is I stand for, what makes me a brand other than simply the service I provide, which could be a commodity or the thing I manufacture. Do you find that people struggle in your classes and in your experience with those deeper questions, digging down into who they really are? And that's one of the challenges.
Yeah, what I see most often are people who are extraordinarily competent, creative, and capable, who don't have the confidence to communicate their genius and their brilliance and their ideas. So where I really come in to help people is uncovering and chipping away at all the things that keep people from really shining. The homework that people have to do is knowing their business, knowing their brand, knowing what they have to give, knowing what their product is and really who their market is. They have to really know their business. And then they come to me to say, now, Taryn, I'm really good at what I do, but I present myself very badly, and I don't know why. Whenever I stand up to speak to the board, I crumble. Whenever I speak on a panel, if I'm the third speaker, I'm already so nervous that my voice shakes and I can't get anything out and it just goes terribly. I come in to help people articulate the ideas, the parts of their business, and really the parts of themselves that come behind the idea. And really, whenever we see people stand up and speak, what we want to see the person. We want to see somebody who is authentic. We want to see their personality come out. No one is turned on by somebody who does a perfect presentation. We like to see people who are human, who wear their hearts on their sleeves, because that we can relate to that because we're not perfect, and it endears us to them. So one of the things I tell people to do is think of their audience as no different from themselves. And when they do this and they focus on what they have in common with their audience, in the same way that we do with branding, it endears us to them, it connects us to them, and we can embody some humility around what it is that we do. And we can focus on serving our audience rather than impressing them. Because if we serve them, we make it about them. And if we're working and focused on impressing our audience, then it's all about us. And frankly, that's just boring. When everybody walks around and they're so concerned about how do I look, how did I do, what if I don't do it right, that's just not any fun. But when we're focused on helping people, creating great products and services, and making the world a better place, quite frankly, our jobs and our lives just get more fun, and I'm always a big fan and supporter of fun.
You know, you mentioned humility and as a core trait, but you can get into a kind of a false humility, can't you, where somebody stands up and they begin their presentation with, I'm not very good at this, and they sort of have their head ducked or whatever, and I always see that and I think, what you really mean is I'm embarrassed, and that's really not humility. That's really false humility. It's kind of a pride thing. Do you find that people struggle with distinguishing authentic humility and that kind of humility?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's confidence and there's cockiness, and there's humility and there's humiliation. Mm-hmm. So one story is that I'm working with a woman right now who is being given an alumni award for her distinguished work over the last 20 years. And when they contacted her to say, we want to honor you at this dinner, and part of this is we're going to make a 5-minute video of you and interview people that have known you throughout the last 20 years. In addition, you have to give a 3-minute acceptance speech. She emailed them and told them she didn't want the award because she didn't want to stand up and speak for 3 minutes, and she was embarrassed by the award. And she ended up changing her mind, and then her friend referred her to me, and the first thing I told her is, you will accept this reward with humility, with graciousness, with respect for the people who decided that you are worthy of this reward. And it really changed her mind and her excitement, really, about going to this event. So I think we can all smell it when people are being inauthentic and we don't like it. And some of that inauthenticity can come from being nervous. Sometimes it can come from being underprepared. Sometimes it can come from cockiness. And we're all human beings and we pick up on things. We pick up on when people are trying to sell us something rather than explain their product and offer it to us in a way that we can come to a decision on our own. So what I really focus on is being authentic and being of service and being generous with not only your products and services, but who you are. Because ultimately, I want to work with a person, not just because of what they have to offer me, but because I like who they are. And for that to happen, I really have to be able to see them in a very real and authentic way.
Well, this goes back to what you were saying about finding the commonality between us, you know, and we often share, or at least we say we do, you know, we talk about the prospect of presenting ourselves in public or public speaking, and we giggle about, you know, how, oh, I wouldn't want to do that, and we make these sort of self-deprecating jokes, and then we often share, you know, I've been in places, I feel very confident as a public speaker, but there have been situations in my life where I felt my voice shake or I noticed I was ducking my head a little bit and I had to, by an act of will, bring those things back around. I think everybody struggles with that. But you're really talking about some other commonalities besides the commonalities of maybe weakness or disempowerment, that there are commonalities of strength that we can get at. And I want to ask you, how do we identify and get at those? Like if you say to me from a sort of a high level or a theoretical level, I need you to get in touch with your audience more. You know, I need to translate that into something. You know, what am I looking for? Where do I connect? What's the point where I and they intersect? Do you have any advice in that area?
Sure. Well, I always tell my classes that when I first started doing improv and theater, I did such a bad job and made such a fool out of myself that almost every night that I went to the theater, when I would go home, I would swear that I would never go back. Mm. Every time on the walk home, I would say, I am never going back. That was the last time. And somehow, I managed to just keep going back, right? So you fall down three times, you get up four, that whole thing. I just kept showing up. I just kept showing up and trying again. And it turned out that not one person in that theater or any of the people I was playing with remembered or cared about what I did. Or at least they didn't care about the times that I thought were terrible. They remembered when I said something great. They remembered when I said something funny or awesome or when I supported someone. So I think we all have this paranoia that people are thinking about us all the time when they're not. And when I see a speaker who stands up and I can see them shaking and I can see their face shaking, I'm not sitting there thinking, what a terrible public speaker. What I'm thinking is, oh, look at her, she's nervous. Oh, look at her, she's trying so hard. That's what I'm thinking. Whenever we see a speaker up there, we want them to do a good job because then I'm getting the WIFM, the WIIFM. That's what's in it for me. Any audience, that's the only thing they care about. If I'm sitting in an audience at a TED Talk, all I care is about what's in this for me. What am I going to get? We're ultimately incredibly self-centered in human beings walking around, self-centered creatures. And so every time I get up in front of an audience, I think, what's in it for my audience? What can I give them? Because, you know, this is in the musical Chicago. I love the audience for loving me, and I love them for loving me, or whatever. You know, the back and forth, it's a reciprocal relationship. And by me taking the risks of getting up and shining and looking good and being confident, even when I don't feel it, the audience is really getting what they need. They're getting the information, and they're getting it in a powerful, fun, clear way. And so I'm serving them, and they like me for doing that.
Well, Taryn, there's a couple of takeaways I have from what you've said so far, which is, you know, part of building a commonality with the audience seems to be kind of a collaboration with the audience. I mean, if they are rooting for me, And I think that's not what we often think. The first time we get up and take a microphone or we set out to write a blog post or we make a video or we give a class, I don't think in the back of our heads, in the back of our minds, we're thinking, wow, you know, everybody's rooting for me. They want this to be awesome. They want to really connect. I think we think they're judging us. And what I'm hearing you say is that's not exactly true. The real context for most people is they're hoping that they're going to get a lot out of it and that consequently we'll do our best. And I also got that what you said, you kept going back when you were tempted to quit. And I get the impression that consistency is really a key to winning this sort of battle with our own self-confidence. Would you say those two takeaways are accurate, or can you expand on those?
Yeah, I do think that doing it again and again and again is key. So I always encourage students to look for additional opportunities to get up in front of a crowd if improving their public speaking is something they really want to do. You know, if I want to knit the greatest scarf on the planet, and I don't, I actually don't like knitting at all. But if that was my goal, I wouldn't do it in one shot. And if I tried three different scarves and all of them were mediocre to average, I would think, you know, maybe I need to do this more and turn out more scarves. That's the worst example I've ever given, by the way.
No, I think it's a great example.
Just want you to know that. So I do think doing it again and again and again, and remembering that practice doesn't make perfect. Practice makes permanent. And so if we don't make perfection the goal, my goal, and I get up in front of audiences all the time, is never to give a perfect speech. It's never to give a perfect speech. My goal is to give the audience what they are there to hear. Because guess what? I'm taking up their time. And our lives are short, and there is nothing more valuable than time. So if I have 30 people in the room and they have to listen to me for an hour, I want to make that time valuable. So if I focus on what they need to get out of that hour, not how good of a speaker can I be in this next hour, that's what's going to make the difference.
You know, actually, you were saying you were deprecating your example there, but actually, yeah, there you go. But I actually think it's a great example because, I mean, we don't necessarily think of knitting this way, but it's what I would call the artist example. So artists never get it right the first time. So if you have an installation sculptor who goes around and creates pieces of sculpture throughout the city, it's not like the first thing he puts out, that's it. We don't have to do another one now because this one is definitive. I've finished my life's work. We're done. Nor is it that he doesn't learn anything or she doesn't learn anything and there's nowhere to grow. So artists never get it right the first time because there's, in a way, there's nothing to get right except their own view of what they're doing and what the next adventure is. And they also never really get it wrong because how can you look at a piece of art and go, no, that's incorrect. You know, I'm sorry, but, you know, that's not an isosceles triangle. We don't judge art that way. So I think it is actually quite helpful to me to look at communication the way you presented it, which is, you know, from this artist motif.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'm sure I brought that up because it's cold outside and,
want a scarf, yeah.
I have a lot of knits on me right now. And you know, the other thing is that it's about being present. So you just use the word presentation. It is about being present. And we can, just as we can tell when other people are nervous, when other people have, you know, they're overcompensating because they're nervous in certain ways, that when a speaker is present with their audience and you can tell that they are with you there in the moment, that they're not phoning it in, that they're not trying to remember a memorized speech, those are the most dynamic, creative, and I think transformational times that one can experience as a speaker or as an audience member. And I learned all of this through through my improv training, which is about being in the moment with somebody else on stage, supporting them, making sure they look good, and having that dynamic experience with the audience. So for every person out there who wants to improve their communication and presentation skills in every area of their life, I cannot recommend improv more, because it's really about getting that training to be alive in the moment and present with other people. And that's what really changes us.
Yeah, I think that's very insightful. Well, let me round this out with one final question in a key area that I notice a lot from the marketing standpoint. As a marketing strategist, I run into perfectionism. And you mentioned perfectionism earlier. You also talked about confidence and sort of uncovering, what you do is uncovering the layers that sort of hide the light under the bushel. You talked about most people are brilliant. Most people have an area of genius that we can uncover. But you get the other end of that, where unless everything I put out is clearly brilliant, clearly genius, I can't put anything out. And it seems to create, it seems to have a tendency to paralyze us. So I often say the perfectionist never does anything, because nothing we do is going to be perfect, so therefore we just don't do anything. And then the question is doing nothing perfection, or is doing nothing simply the absence of doing anything? So I want to, yeah, I mean, like, you know, you have to kind of reason through it. But, you know, it's sort of like perfectionism is a little bit like alcoholism. You hear it, you know there's an issue, but you don't really want to deal with it, you know, down at its core. So what I want to know is, how do you unpack and get deeper at the issue of perfectionism, what really is driving it, and really free people from that, so that their addiction to perfection, so that they can actually do something, they can actually get out on a stage or produce a presentation or whatever it is they're going to do?
Yeah, well, in theater and on the stage with improv, there's no place for perfectionism. In fact, in improv, we say there are no mistakes. And what that means is that when somebody makes and I'm doing air quotes, a mistake, that what that means is that when that moment happens, if I were to say right now, if I'll use this present moment as an example, if I were to say when that moment happening, if I were to make that verbal mistake, then you as a fellow improviser might support that mistake by saying, yes, Taryn, when I'm going to the store, then I also find I am happening on the vegetable aisle, right? So maybe you might use the word happening in a weird or fun or different or grammatically incorrect way also. And then what happens is that we find a game. So now somebody else comes in and they say something else and they use the word happening in a new different way. And I have seen scenes on the stage where people support each other's mistakes turn into comedy gold. I also know that as an entrepreneur, when I started my business 7-8 years ago, that I didn't know what I was doing in many different areas. So I just started trying things. I just started trying some classes. Hey, anybody want to do this? And then I would make up an agenda and people would do it and like it and tell their friends. And I would never, I wouldn't do many of the things now that I did back then, because I've learned and I've grown and I've changed and I have focused now on what people want, not what I think they want. And I would not be where I am now if I had tried to be perfect from the start. We are meant to make mistakes and we learn from those mistakes. So perfectionism is an incredibly dangerous state of mind as far as I'm concerned. And the truth is, nobody is perfect and nobody can accomplish things over a period of time, including a presentation, that is perfect. So for anybody struggling with that, I would say it's okay to lay that burden down.
Exactly. Lay that burden down and bundle up with a nice non-perfect knitted scarf. Well, you've been listening to the MadPipe Marketing Madcast, where we talk about marketing strategy and bring marketing insights to businesses and nonprofits. To get more episodes like this, visit madpipe.com/podcast or find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Taryn, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Daniel.
The MadPipe Madcast.